to this recording studio somewhere far, far away.
The Mary Whitehouse Experience. Okay, right, first up this week, the motoring experience.
And away off the grid as they know he can reverse bend. There seems to be some sort of... Oh, my goodness, Senna has rammed Prost. Prost looks as though he's out of the race and out of the championship. And who's that going through on the outside and taking the lead? It's Princess Anne!
Yes, Princess Anne became another in a long list of royals to have been done for speeding. Mark Phillips, Viscount Linley, Princess Diana, all have been stopped for driving too fast. If all the royals lose their licence, then they're going to have to start travelling around by taxi.
God blimey, I tell you what, you know, this traffic's terrible. I mean, I don't know, it gets worse and worse, don't it, eh?
Bunch of innovates, yeah.
Oh, I ought to do something. I mean, that's Cecil Parkinson, he calls himself a transport minister.
Good on the left, and if we could just stop at the cash point.
I mean, look, they haven't even bloody hell. Did you see that? Diabolical, you bleeding road hog.
Sorry, that was my daughter.
I think they own the bleeding road.
I do own the bleeding road.
You've got to feel a bit sorry for anyone who gets done for speeding. Generally, the speed limit is probably the most universally ignored law in the country. Everybody takes it for granted that when the sign says 30, it means 45. When it says 40, it means 60. And when it says 70, it means put your foot down and pretend you're royal. On the odd occasion when someone does actually obey the speed limit, they become the object of bitter and undisguised hatred from other motorists.
Oh, for God's sake, get out of the way! Get out of the way! I can't believe this. He's doing 28 miles an hour. Look at him, Mr. Bloody Self-Righteous. Oh, that's it. Put the brakes on. There's a slight bend in the road about half a mile away. You wouldn't want to take that faster than 15. Oh, come on, come on! I don't believe it. He's going to stop at that zebra crossing. They were only a quarter of the way across. You only eclipsed them.
Oh, we'll never get back to the station in time for the bill.
According to insurance companies, the most high-risk drivers are young men under 25. Rubbish. Everyone who's ever driven knows that the most dangerous drivers are old people. Now, you're not supposed to ever criticise the elderly, but quite honestly, the 22-year-old Y-boy in the Escort XR3 is a paragon of good driving compared to the old codger in the Austin 1100.
And as they come up to the traffic lights, Grandad is changing lanes without signalling. The cars behind him slam their brakes on and he's fallen asleep. Now he's racing up to 12 miles an hour. There's a 200-yard queue of frustrated drivers behind him, and now Granny is just about to say the immortal words, "Look out, there's a car!" They're on a main A road in the rush hour, and yet she always says, "Look out, there's a car!" And then he goes down the way to his friend. This is the worst performance we've seen from Prince Philip in a long time.
Now, another thing that you can't avoid as a driver is petrol stations. Now, for some reason, petrol stations always sell charcoal briquettes, large white plant pots, and bags of fertiliser. As if the owner was going to open a garden centre and then at the last minute changed it to a garage. Most petrol stations nowadays are also self-service and you have to follow the instructions on the pump.
To serve yourself, first select grid required. Find the button's been taped over and a little sign saying, "Not working." Drive to next pump. Press button. Wait for 15 seconds. Press button again. Look across the kiosk and see that the attendant is wearing Walkman and reading newspaper. When you hear ominous clunk and pump starts humming, make sure indicator is set at zero and glass is full. Whatever that means. Place the nozzle in fuel pipe, making sure you scratch the paint around the cap and fill engine. Fuel pump will automatically cut out every 5 seconds or so for no discernible reason. And no matter how hard you try, you'll always end up having bought £10 and one penny's worth.
If you go into a garage while going somewhere with your friends, you will be in there for at least half an hour. And it's not the fuel that's the problem. Right, I'll just get some petrol.
Oh, Steve, can you get me a bounty?
Okay.
Oh, can I have a bounty as
all
well?
All right, two bounties.
Actually, I think I have Maltesers.
Okay, right.
If they haven't got any, I have Minstrels, but not M&Ms.
Right? Okay, right, so a bounty and some Maltesers.
Can I have an orange juice?
Yeah.
Not an orange drink.
No, okay.
An orange juice.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and ask if they've got any milk.
Right, yeah.
Oh, and if you could get me a bag of fertiliser and some charcoal briquette.
Okay, right, yeah. Olive, shut. Now, many people have already pointed out the horribleness of funny car stickers. But in fact, the worst car stickers aren't the ones about pickling traffic wardens or pool players doing it on the table. The worst ones are the pompty, smug ones that go in the backs of Volvos, like, warning, I slow down for horses. As if you've got any alternative when a horse walks in front of your car. Warning, I mangle the bonnet of my car on horses. The other thing about that sticker is that it's also a subtle way of saying, actually, I live in an area where a lot of people own horses. You don't see people in inner cities with, warning, I slow down for double parked cars and huge unmended potholes, do you? Now, finally, the worst thing about driving is the driving test. And the worst thing about the driving test is that you never have to drive like that again in your life. They've just changed the rules so that you have to reverse into a parking space instead of round the corner. They ought to change more of it to fit in with real driving conditions. All right, Mr. Davis, now we're in a multi-lane one-way system and approaching a busy roundabout, so I want you, when I tap the dashboard, to rummage in the glove compartment for your favourite cassette. Good. Now, we're on the roundabout, and I want you to signal for the third exit, and now go off at the second exit. Good. Now, you can't find the cassette, so you wind down the window and try and pull the aerial up. Excellent. Now, we're on the motorway, and I want you to accelerate up to 95 miles an hour. Good. Now, what can you see in your rear mirror?
A National Express coach trying to overtake.
And now the fashion experience. At the present time, as some of you may be aware, it is extremely hip to wear flared trousers. This practice emerged in Manchester, which is why they lost their bid to host the 1996 Olympics. The Olympic Committee said it would cost too much to widen the running lanes, and that they wouldn't be able to tell if the marathon walkers were actually running.
Flares ranked as one of global history's worst fashion mistakes, which we've now had to live through twice. But then again, history has many other dark ages of dress sense.
Good day, Master Taylor. I think perchance my ruff is not big enough. The other day I managed to eat some gravy. But now givest me without more ado some crisscross garters, a goodly pair of thigh-high leather boots, and a velveteen cape, if you please.
Sorry, mate, you want Miss Selfridge. Round the corner and down Pudding Lane. Although, we do happen to have some of these puffball nappies, which you can wear until someone invents the toilet.
One of the most embarrassing garments to buy would have been the codpiece, equivalent then to the modern trauma of buying your first bra or condom.
Don't giga den, Master Shopkeeper. I'd like us some leeches, a potato, one of those Are You a Witch home predictor kits, and a codpiece, please.
With haste, good sir, which size would you prefer? Small, medium, large, or obviously not true?
Large.
It looketh somewhat roomy.
No, it's fine.
Hast thou bought it to appear at court and dance a madrigal with the Countess Olivier by Chiswick Water?
Now I'm going to release a single called Word Up.
Much of Elizabethan fashion was actually a reaction against the more austere styles of the Middle Ages, where design was, if anything, a bit medieval.
Well, Mad Med of Blackwater is wearing a torn sack covered in manure and flaky bits from her ski boot. Her footwear is very cleverly designed so you can't tell which is her rotting foot and which is her rotting shoe. Med's previous modelling work includes the gargoyles at Chartres Cathedral and, of course, Razzle. And as you can see, around her belt, an accessory that everyone seems to be wearing this year, 7 dead chickens. All in all, vintage Vivian Westwood.
And now here comes Claude the Cleric with a selection of this year's diseases. As you can see, rickets and scurvy are in this autumn, but out after nearly a decade is syphilis so bad that your nose falls off. Which reminds me, Selena.
In the 19th century, fashion was dominated by the Romantics, a look which was to be taken up again by the new Romantics in our own time. And in fact, this influence went beyond the purely sartorial.
Lord Byron.
John Keats.
May I crave your indulgence to listen to my latest poem?
Why, certainly.
A thing of beauty is a joy forever. Look now, look all around, there's no sign of life. Voices and other sounds, can you hear me now? This is planet Earth. You're looking at planet Earth.
Yes, I've got the point, yes.
We're doing songs now. Goldfinger!
Thank you very much.
Possibly the greatest period for male fashion was the Roman era, where men got to wear pleated miniskirts and still pull Italian birds. Perhaps the most interesting and diverse period in the history of fashion was China after the Cultural Revolution.
Hello? You wouldn't by any chance have a blue boiler suit? Let me have a look. Ah, yes. We haven't got anything else. What about something to go with it? You know, something that will really make me stand out from the crowd. What about this blue peaked cap? If you wear it with the boiler suit and ride a bicycle, you'll certainly stand out.
Marvelous.
Marvelous. 100 million of us all darting about in boiler suits. You know, sometimes I think that from space, we must look like Casey Jones' sperm.
Casey Jones, steaming and rolling. Casey Jones, you never have to guess when you hear the tooting on the whistle.
Oh. Which one is the fallopian tube? Oh, no. He's been doing it on the coal scuttle again.
Well, I think that bit guarantees us the Sony Award.
Hello, White House experience.
Now, in case you somehow managed to miss all the hype, this week saw the start of David Lynch's much-vaunted murder mystery Twin Peaks on BBC Two. If any of those of you who missed it, fortunately, Hugh and I both saw it, so we can update you on the story.
Well, a girl got murdered.
Yeah, girl got done in...
And nobody's quite sure who did it.
In a bag.
Yeah.
She was in a bag. And,
But there are lots of suspects.
There's lots of suspects. And some of them,
I've got motives.
I've got quite good motives, yeah.
Oh, there's a sawmill.
There's a sawmill.
Yeah.
And... A car. A clamp. A tramp. A bus. A jam. A crash. A smash. A field. A cloud. A cow. A house. Another house. A row of houses. All exactly the same. Some concrete. A car park. A horrid sculpture. A really boring shopping mall. Another car park. A Millets. A CNA. The M1. A branch of the Samaritans. A 1960s planning nightmare. Thank God all cities aren't like Milton Keynes.
And now could you please welcome Mark Hurst.
Looking at some of the week's news, and basically, do you remember that game Consequences? Remember that game where you have to put so-and-so met so-and-so, what they said, and what happened in the end? Because some of the actual real stories have been like Consequences. I was playing it the other night, and we got Edward E. met Saddam Hussein in Baghdad. He said, fancy releasing some hostages. He said, what's the Greek word for Tupperware? They had a snog. That's one that came out. But, tests for seven-year-olds seems to be a bit of an unpopular thing. Because when you're a kid, do you remember those horrible essays you have to have, like, me? You have to write an essay, me, like, my name is Mark, I am seven, I go to school, it is not good. You have to put that there. On the way home from school, I like to stop off at ye oldie computer software shoppy. An horrible old man told us off, I won't be horrible when I am 18 like him. Once some people came to our school called the Society of the Sealed Knot, and they act out famous battles on the field. They did the Brixton riots. It was good. That sort of thing. And you have to write about your weekend as well, which is horrible, because all weekend you're wandering around thinking, shit, I've got to do something interesting, so I've got to write about it on Monday. Try and get run over. That'll be good, huh? And I picked up this Police Federation magazine. This is the actual official Police Federation magazine, and with great flair, it's called... Police. And inside is an article about the ethnic minorities in the police force, because they're very eager to attract ethnic minorities into the force. That's what all these 100-mile-an-hour car chasers are about. They're just hanging out the window with an application form. Just read it through, will you? No obligation. Here's an article that I found. My name is Paul. I am 30. I am in the police. It is good. What I like is when we get people for things. Once I got someone for something, but he ran off. I found him later on, and he fell down some stairs. It was good. There are lots of bad people, so I think we should have guns. What I don't like is my hat, which looks funny, and sometimes people laugh, but if I had a gun, they might not. There are some black people in the police, and sometimes we call them names and they look sad. Once the sergeant asked me which ones had been calling them names, but I said, I don't know, but I did, by Paul, age 30. First thing, yeah. I am 30 myself now, I hit that this year, and I am actually the same age as Coronation Street, and the other similarity is that we've both just got a new cat as well, if you follow that little episode. It's a better actor than Percy Sugden as well, if you've watched him. But I got this cat, honestly, and I got it because we had mice. We had mice, and friends of mine said, don't poison, that's not natural, that's cruel. Get a cat, that is the natural order of things. Which I don't know if a mouse had a death certificate, poured to death over a five-hour period, death by natural causes. I don't think it. Anyway, got this cat, and I thought that the cat was going to smell rodent when it came out of the box, and realised that we weren't getting it for love of a small furry animal. We just wanted it to clear up our problem. I thought it might come out of the box like top cows, and say, how do you do, Jimmy the Mouser? Here's my card, my, it's crunching at bats. You have a little rodent problem, don't worry, my rates are very reasonable. Give me 3 pounds of fresh white fish, and I mean fresh, not frozen, I do know the difference. Plus an introduction to that little Persian in your neighbour's window, I do believe she likes me. That's the deal, take her or leave it. When you've made your decision, I'll be in front of the fire. But he does do impressions, actually. He does a really good Freddy Krueger when you're least expecting. He just stroking it. That boy, weird. And he's now a baby substitute, my cat, which is a bit awkward for him because he wants to go out and stalk his territory. I insist on taking him out in the pram in the sailor suit, which is, you know. And I had his balls off as well. I had him done. £18 they cost. I said, here's a tenner, leave one on. Here's a tenner.
What's all the giggles?
Oh, yeah, and there's a biker called James.
Yeah. John.
James.
Yeah.
James. And a necklace.
There's a necklace.
I think, well, more of a pendant, suppose.
Yeah.
We feel it is our public duty to warn you of a grievous malpractice that may be at the bottom of many of today's social ills. The people responsible are clearly perverted, degraded outlaws, with little or no respect for the ordinary decencies of human behaviour. Yes, it appears that for some time now there is a group of people who have been, I hardly bring myself to say it, taking two bottles into the shower. Shampoo and conditioner.
I mean, who are these maniacs? I mean, it's just so stupid. Why don't they just wash and go? Honestly, David, it's just sort of selfish, irresponsible behaviour. It makes my blood boil. I mean, and the government say they can't be prosecuted, yeah, but it's not just their own lives they're putting at risk. Naked people might tip over that other bottle, not expecting it to be there. Why should they?
If someone else might want to use that shower quickly.
Yes, but thank God there are some other people apart from us, and I've seen them on the television, who are beginning to speak out on this issue.
Shampoo and conditioner. Take two bottles into the shower. Not me. I just spend my time looking in other people's lockers.
And what I particularly like about the work of this pressure group, Rob, is that their very tone of voice, absolutely filled with contempt and disbelief, expresses exactly how this shampoo and conditioner behaviour is on a par with the worst excesses of humanity.
Well, Dave, actually, in some of their longer broadcasts, they make this point very clearly.
Shampoo and conditioner. Take two bottles into the shower. Make my mother sleep with a donkey. Exhume a recently buried corpse and smear its blood all over Thora Heard's face. Not me. I just want to wash and go.
But what about those sad characters who continue, despite everything, to use shampoo and conditioner? We smuggled a hidden microphone into the locker rooms at Stevenage Leisure Centre.
Oi, did you see that?
Yeah.
That bloke. One minute he was in the shower washing his hair, and the next minute he was gone.
I don't believe it. I've been here 2 days.
Why people can't realise the immense benefits of using wash and go is beyond me. I mean, think of the problems Janet Leigh alone could have avoided in Psycho.
Oh, hang on, hold it, she's gone.
Wash and Go is made by Vidal Sassoon, and the thing about Vidal Sassoon is with a name like that, he just had to become a hairdresser. I mean, what else could he have become?
At a cinema near you, he's back. He's angry. He's Vidal Sassoon.
So this year, the Sasha Distel Award for Smarmy Puffiness goes to Vidal Sassoon. Oh no, that one sort of fit. Excellent, my favourite. Wash and Go is a very constructivist name for a product. That is, it's named after what you do with it and what you do immediately afterwards. Similarly, Eat and Go is the new designer name for all bran. Down and Throw is the new name for Kestrel Lager. And Board and Sink for P&O Ferries.
Lastly, though, after that near riot of political consequences there, be vigilant, for there is a particular type of person, listeners, commonly found at swimming pools, who, although at first may seem to go along with the wash and go philosophy, is in fact something very different.
Shampoo and conditioner. Take 2 bottles into the shower. Not me. I'm Duncan Goodhue.
Experience. Oh, yeah, and the receptionist. At the police station's got a silly voice.
Yeah, we don't know if that's significant yet, but...
Could be. Good. Last week, we looked at the telephone. This week, the postal experience. Life is basically just a succession of letters. From this one...
Dear Mrs. Punt, here is your child's vaccination certificate. Stephen successfully vaccinated 29 people. Congratulations.
To this one...
Dear Mr. Hopkinson... Please can you let Stephen off PE today, as he's asked me to write you this letter. Signed, Mrs. Punt.
To this one.
Dear Steve, this is a hard letter to write. It's over between us. It will never work with you going to university and me staying on for another year at Sixth Form College. Yours, Mr. Hopkinson.
And so on through life. Probably the first letter most people get to write is the thank you letter. The day after Boxing Day, your parents would manacle you to the Basildon Bond and not let you go until you'd written...
Dear Auntie Florence, thank you for the lovely presents. I've worn the jumper already. It is nice. I've always wanted one with rabbits on. I will wear it lots, honest. I won't stick it at the back of the wardrobe and eventually use it to clean my bike. Also, thank you for the record token. I went to Our Price yesterday and I bought a really brilliant album. It's called Warrior with a Crowded Codpiece by Venom Phallus. There's a brilliant track on it called The Great Brain Robbery. I have wanted it ever since you played it to me on the piano last Easter.
Another early experience of correspondence is with postcards. The most interesting thing with postcards is the way that people have to adjust what they write according to who the postcard's to.
Dear birds and guests, whoa, it's well hot here. Birds, beach, booze, not in that order. Floor. The Spanish birds spend all day topless, then they get off with the English blokes. Poor Fabor. Must go. Waz is getting some more lager in.
Dear Granny and Grandad, lots of fascinating Catalan architecture. Many churches bearing the unmistakable stamp of Moorish influence. I would take some photos for you, but I'm too pissed.
Another tough one is love letters. All men keep their love letters, usually in a shoebox. And when they're old and sad, they get them down from the loft and they say, I could have married her. It must be easy for postmen to spot love letters. For some reason, people do little drawings all over the envelope and add private jokes or all those famous abbreviations like Swark, sealed with a loving kiss, or Norwich, knickers off ready when I come home. Which is okay, but someone's writing them on my gas bill. The other thing about love letters is that, like phone calls, they don't ever end.
Love from Robert. A PS, write soon. PPS, write very soon. PPPS, sniggle wiggle tiggle tuggle wuggle. Oh, PPPPPS, I think Alan knows. Shall I tell him? PPPPPS, what about Friday? PPPPPPPPPPS, I think I'm developing a stammer.
Even in these days of fiber optic telecommunications, there's no doubt that some things are easier said in a letter. This wouldn't be much help if it arrived in a fax.
Dear Auntie Florence, I was deeply saddened to hear of Uncle Tim's death. I will be able to attend the funeral to offer my personal condolences, and you can give me the fiver he owed me.
Another way in which the art of letter writing survives in the telephone age is through the tradition of the pen pal. Writing to an overseas pen friend has many attractions. You can improve in a foreign language, you can help them to improve their English, and most important of all, they might be really sexy. Let's face it, the average 14-year-old bloke isn't writing to a 16-year-old French girl to improve his vocabulary for GCSE. Also, because she's 400 miles away, she won't know that the rest of the class all call you dickhead. Pen pal correspondence usually ends for one of two reasons. Either you just lose interest, or more often you send off your photograph and never hear from them again. The inevitable exchange of photos could often be a shattering experience. Somewhere in Croydon, you're looking at a Polaroid of a stunning Teutonic blonde who'd be more at home on the cover of Vogue, while simultaneously at Hamburg, she's looking at a passport photo of a greasy, spotty-haired git in a kipper tie.
Before the invention of the phone, people did all their communicating by letter, and many famous people have had even their most trivial letters collected and published, particularly great literary figures.
Dear Mr. Wordsworth, this is just to inform you that your account is now £14.04 overdrawn.
From Lord Byron, Athens, 1822.
Whoa, it's well hot here.
Dear Charles Dickens, congratulations. Yes, you have been specially selected by our computer and could be the proud owner of a brand new Vauxhall Astra.
Some people are compulsive letter writers and send letters to newspapers. If you become a real letter writing fanatic, you have to be careful. Always remember which paper you're writing to. You can't send the same letter to the Times that you would to the Daily Star.
Dear sir, I bought a tin of beans the other day. Imagine my surprise when inside I found spaghetti hoots. My wife couldn't stop laughing.
I remain your most obedient servant, Lieutenant Colonel Reginald Spaulding Brown, dear sir.
Now, what we'd like to do, part of the point of that sketch, we would actually like to start some correspondence with our listeners. We have got enormous respect for anyone who is listening at 7 o'clock on a Saturday, because it means that you've had the willpower to not watch Catchphrase. So what we thought we'd do is we'd like to hear, first of all, this week, about your encounters with famous people. If you've ever met a celebrity, please write and tell us about it. For example, Rob here met Noel Edmonds in 1975. I once got Alan Pascoe's autograph. We all know particularly if you've had a relationship with a celebrity or actually corresponded with them or if they did anything embarrassing or were drunk.
Don't worry if you haven't actually ever had a relationship with a celebrity or met one. Just lie. Okay.
Yeah, just lie about it. Right, and we'll read out the best ones next week. So send your celebrity experiences to Michael Rodd was my babysitter, the Mary Whitehouse Experience, Radio 1, BBC Broadcasting House, London, W1A1AA.
You've been listening to The Mary Whitehouse Experience. It was written and performed by David Beale, Rob Newman, Steve Plant, Hugh Dennis and Mark Hurst. Send any letters to Michael Rodd was my babysitter, care of The Mary Whitehouse Experience, Radio 1, BBC Broadcasting House, London, W1A, 1AA, and the producer is Armando Iannucci.
There's lots of trees.
And some donuts.
And donuts.
Donuts.
Yeah.